Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life after booze.
Hi. How is everyone?
Oh, we're starting.
We're starting.
I thought it was right in the intro. Okay. What's up?
Nope. We'll put the intro in later, Max.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. So this week we are welcoming a very special guest. Max LaRock. He is my personal nutrition coach and part of the sober community online. Been super stoked to connect with him and have him on the show today. So Max, what are your pronouns? Where are you from? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Max LaRock. I go by he, him. I am from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I am the owner of Max LaRock Fitness. It is a health and wellness life coaching company that is strictly online coaching. And then I am the co-owner of a gym here in Edmonton, Alberta called Free Fitness. And I also host a podcast called the Squats and Sober Thoughts Podcast.
So cool.
That's so awesome. So Katie, I want to know how you met Max. Was it through social media?
Yeah, of course. Perfect. Everything's through social media now that I'm sober because I don't do anything in real life. I think I stumbled across Max's page when I started following Chelsea from Mixed Without, who we've had on the show. Can't wait to have her back. She is fucking hilarious. And I don't know, she just reposted something of his. So I hit follow and then I think he followed me. And then I was just I like the shit that he's posting and he's got a really cute dog named Lucy. And I really just thought it was Max, your content is the good part of health and nutrition and lifestyle coaching that we see on the internet. And so I really appreciate that. And then Chelsea posted something on Close Friends one time and was like, should I start dating again? Online dating. I was like, yeah, you should date this guy, Max. And she's like, Max is from Canada, dude. I'm in Texas. No. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then that was really it. And that was 7 months ago.
According to Chelsea, though, because we've talked about this, I'm an Aries, so apparently we aren't a match. I can't remember what she is. Scorpio, I think it is. Apparently we're not a match.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Am I.
I don't know a lot about that world. I know a little bit of it, but apparently we're not a good match. So even if she was in Edmonton, I don't think it would work.
She's he lives in Canada. He's an Aries. I'm out.
I'm out. Yeah. Well, it's funny because today is officially Aries season.
She's told me lots, actually.
When's your birthday? It's coming up.
Yeah, nah, almost a week and a half, April 3rd.
That's awesome. So yeah, that's how I, we intertwined. And then I was I would love to get into this later on the episode, Max, but you did something that to me was just hell yeah. So you outed yourself for at one point in time, buying followers years ago when you started your account, and you outed yourself and then was I'm going to delete this account. Go follow me over here. That doesn't feel in alignment anymore. And I want to build this from the ground up and what feels true to me. And when I saw that, I was those are the people that I want to be around. So that was really what encouraged me to reach out to you to work with you directly.
Well, thank you very much. I've actually had quite a few people mention just the kind of honesty side of things with that post too. Is at first it was nerve-wracking thinking that I'm going to go from this account that has, what looks like a good, authentic, large following to essentially starting from scratch. And I've actually had the best business months I've had since doing so, which is kind of a mind fuck. But at the same time too, it just goes to show that people do really gravitate towards authenticity. And when you are putting out a good, honest message, people will resonate with that. So even if you're putting out a good message, but there's still things you're doing behind closed doors that don't align with what you're saying, people see through that bullshit. And just from an energy standpoint, people pick up on that, whether it's through, in person or social media, podcasting, whatever it may be, people know when you're full of shit.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
That's so cool. And also just no one knows, no one knows what we're doing in terms of wanting to get started and social media and all of that stuff. And I think there's so much trial and error that can be immediately pointed to be oh, you did this bad thing, or oh, you did this wrong thing, or this isn't the correct way to do things. And knowing that it's okay to make mistakes and pivot and continue to adapt and grow, at least just thinking about sobriety themes, that's been huge for me. So I don't know. I think it's really cool because you didn't have to tell anyone that you did that. I would have totally took it to the grave. So props to you.
Well, and you know what it was that because I had essentially relapsed, not with alcohol, but with cannabis. And that's what kind of triggered that inauthentic message I was putting out there. Because again, I was still putting on the persona that I was sober. And actually for the last probably 6 months that I was, you know, when I restarted smoking weed, I actually wasn't saying I was sober anymore. I was just saying alcohol free, almost as my way to like kind of scapegoat it, to be like, no one's going to pick up on it. If I just say alcohol free, they won't pick up on the sobriety standpoint. And then for me is actually when I read the book Dopamine Nation at the beginning of the new year, when she talks a lot about some of the 12 steps and, you know, ones that she applies to addiction and mental health and all the above. And one of them was just radical honesty. And it was just essentially the foundation of like, if you can't be honest with yourself, you can't be honest with anybody. And ever since making that post, like it just feels like such a weight off of my shoulders, which seems like such a minor thing. But when you are an online business and when you are an online presence, when you're doing the things that don't, when you're doing the things that don't align with what you're saying, like you just, if you have any morals whatsoever, you don't fucking feel good about it.
Totally. And I think that that's something about Dry Hard Pod that we've made clear from the beginning. Like, we're basically learning and processing out loud and talking about the things that we're doing, that we're not doing, and the things we don't want to be doing anymore. Because Kaylee and I have both gone through this with cannabis, right? Like, it was something that I used as harm reduction through my first year and a half of quitting drinking. And then I dabbled with not doing it, you know, the last 6 months. And so I kind of went on and off. And right now I'm on like a 2 month streak being off cannabis. And this is kind of a funny that I think, I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but my husband and I were in the car the other day. And I said something about not having my driver's license in my bag. And he was like, why don't you have your driver's license with you? And I was like, because I will stop and buy weed if I have it. And he was like, I cannot relate to that at all. Like, he's just so dry, right? He's so, like, addiction isn't something that he feels like he grapples with. He hasn't had a drink in years just because, right? And I'm like, I legit would rather get a ticket for driving without my license on me physically than go into a weed shop. So that's where I'm at.
Well, because we spoke about that in your consultation back in February there or whatever it was. And yeah, we spoke about that and just is... Yeah. Again, to each their own, do whatever you want to do, but it's sort of, it's you are the only one that will ever know the intent behind how you're using whatever substance it may be,
right?
Whether it be substance or non-substance, whether it's your social media, your online dating, porn, you know, literally anything can be abused, but only you know the intent behind it. And that's what didn't feel good for me, because when I did initially start smoking again, I went, I believe, about 6 months completely clean. And then for me, it was when I had set original kind of milestones of like from a business standpoint, from a finances standpoint, that I was like, you know what, fuck it, just like, you know, celebrate this. Did it. It was great. You know, did it the one time, got baked off of my ass because I hadn't taken a six month break in like fucking 10 years.
That's
so it didn't take much.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it was a great time. But again, the intention behind it was purely to celebrate the successes that I had been having. And then went another 2 months without it, then did it again. And then it was that slippery slope of like, well, fuck, you know, you did it last weekend, just do it this weekend. And then next thing you know, it's Friday, Saturday. And then next thing you know, you still have some on Sunday. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then next thing you know, you've already said, fuck it, you've done it 3 days in a row. You might as well just keep doing it. And then all of a sudden, it's 7 days a week again. And that's when I started to feel really shitty about it. And I started to feel that negative ripple effect that came from it, where yes, I'm still showing up to work. Yes, I'm still doing, you know, the things that need to be done, but I know that there's also more that I can do. And at first I was sort of lying to myself and saying that it was because it was allowing me to be more creative. Mm-hmm. But
I do that.
From the dopamine standpoint, it would release these creative ideas, but then it would also release the procrastination the next morning when I woke up in a very dopamine deficient state, that I wouldn't act on the creative ideas. So then over time, you start actually developing anxiety around the fact that, fuck, I had this great idea last night, but I'm too fucking lazy in the morning to do anything about it. And then you start developing anxiety about that. And then you start getting upset with yourself about it. Then the self-worth issues start to go down. And that's the rabbit hole of addiction, where all of a sudden your self-worth is so low that you just continue to use it over and over and over again, knowing full well that you don't want to fucking use it. But again, that's addiction in a nutshell right there.
Totally. Yeah. So let's rewind then, because I know nothing about your like sobriety story. How long have you been alcohol free? Did you say that?
Yeah, December 1st, 2020. So almost two and a half years kind of thing, give or take, 2 years and 4 months.
Well, yeah, I was 1 month after you, and Kaylee was, what, 1 month before?
I was October 2020, yeah, so we're all really similar. Nice. And also, when you sent that information over, Max, I clocked, like, right before the holidays. Like, mine, yeah. We talked about a little bit about being right before the holidays, but I had a few months leading up. That is, like, first month sobriety in December. Like, I want to know all of it, but also just how that was for you.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll see where I start this. So it originally started technically when I got Lucy. So I got Lucy August 12th of 2020 with my ex-girlfriend. And so my ex-girlfriend was Italian. We'd been together for like literally not even a year at this point, and there was a lot of pressure to have kids, have a family, kind of fucking right now, whether you want to or not to, we kind of have to. So I started recognizing at the time I'd hired a business coach for my online business because we had just gone into our second lockdown in Canada. So we had like, our lockdowns were fucking ridiculous here. Like we were locked down three different times.
In Oregon, it was the same way. We were really similar to you guys.
Yeah. So it was, we were just about to start the second lockdown, I believe. So I had hired an online fitness coach to basically transition my business online because I'd wanted to go online for my business for many, many years at that point. I've been coaching for 13 years now. I'd wanted to go online, but just I was always full in person. It was like, I don't have any time and or desire to transition my business online, nor do I have a fucking clue how to do it. And on top of that, I'm also a fucking chronic / alcoholic. So my desire to do just about fucking anything was pretty slim to none outside of just train my clients, go home, smoke and drink. No, that was it. So when I hired...
Start a family.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't my decision. That was hers. Yeah. So there was a lot of external pressure to say the least. So when I hired this business coach, it was really good because the first month of the program was a lot of life coaching and a lot of just, you know, when you are going to put yourself in a space online, like it's exhausting. Obviously, as you guys know, it's fucking exhausting. And if you're going to put yourself in a space online and not be your authentic self, like it's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. So in that first month was when I first started to actually contemplate my relationship with alcohol. And I'd gone through phases. So I basically drank right from when I was 18 through till I'd have been 29. No, I would have just turned 30 at this point. And so throughout that time, like kind of periodically having like really high highs and, you know, some stints of not sobriety by any means, but at least just like less consumption of alcohol was always a chronic. There was never a time throughout basically the ages of 18 and 30 that there was any period without marijuana. So at that point, I started contemplating it. We were getting Lucy. So it's now like July of 2020. And it was in a month's time that we were getting Lucy. So that was when I first started thinking like, hey, like, fuck, I'm $40,000 in debt. I haven't told her yet at this point, by the way. I'm drinking like a half a 40 of scotch a night. I'm smoking 1 to 3 joints a night. Like, you know, I'm not in a good space right now. And I know I was feeling the external pressure from her and her family that, you know, she wanted to have family, she wanted to have kids, yada, yada, yada. So I started to kind of cut back on alcohol. When we got Lucy, that was when I officially was just like, you know what? I know I need to cut back completely on one of these. And so for me, it was like slowly cutting out the alcohol to the point where I was then drinking no alcohol at all. And that's when I first started to actually make content online. And I was talking about anxiety, depression, mental health struggles and things like that, that I would openly talk about with my clients in person, but never in a public facing manner on mm-hmm. social media. Mm-hmm. And I just felt extremely inauthentic doing it, you know, like, oh, do X, Y, Z for your anxiety. And then I would go smoke fucking 2 joints. I'm like, is that really like, do you really feel good about that? Like, not at all. So finally, I wrote a post the one day and my girlfriend was at work at the time. And it was the first time I ever actually wrote down how much I was drinking, my intent of my drinking and how long I'd been doing it for. And like, this is what I believe in the power of journaling and things like that, is just seeing it from a different perspective and not just your preconditioned thoughts in your head. Because the preconditioned thoughts you have in your head, you'll lie to yourself and you'll make it seem like it's not a big deal or whatever it may be. And so seeing it on my laptop was just like, holy fuck. Like
the data. Yeah.
Like, I'm an alcoholic. If I had read this and it was a best friend who sent that to me, I would be quite worried about my friend. So why was I not worried about myself? And so I read it and was just like, holy shit. Like, that was the first time it actually kind of set in that, like, I had a pretty severe drinking problem. And so when she came home that day, I showed it to her. It was quite the, like, not to go into too many details of that because it was very triggering on her end from a past relationship that she had. Yada, yada, yada. She thought she was in the same place she was years prior. Wasn't, blah, blah, blah. We had a we kind of fought for like a month and then it just wasn't going to work out. But so we split. This would have been beginning of November. And so I had been like 2 weeks clean at that point. And then my whole life just got completely fucking thrown upside down. And when I had moved in with her like 6 months prior, I sold everything. I was, you know, in the honeymoon phase where I was so fucking in love. I was going to be with her for the rest of my life and blah, 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 blah. So I sold my, and I moved into her house. So I sold my couches. I sold my bed. I sold like literally fucking everything. And again, I'm secretly $40,000 in debt at this point. So like, I'm getting pretty fucking close to rock bottom without many people knowing the truth behind it all. And so we end up splitting. We did 1 week of like sharing Lucy basically because we had gotten her together. And at that point, after I think 4 days of the first like kind of week to week swap, it was like, this isn't going to work. And she's like, I want Lucy. And I was like, fuck, are you taking my fucking dog? Like, I don't give a, I don't have a fucking, I don't have a fucking pot to piss in at this point. Like fuck, are you taking the one thing that I have in my life at this point? All the while I'm trying to get sober.
Yeah.
So we split, I think it's like November 10th, somewhere around there. And so I'd been 2 weeks clean at that point. We officially split, obviously relapsed. Like I'm still going through withdrawals at this point. Like fuck, my whole life's upside down. I'm not going to not drink. So then I drank basically for like 3 weeks, pretty much straight to the point where the last night that I drank, I remember like bawling my eyes out and I got so drunk that I like puked my guts out, passed out completely. And I just felt like such a fucking piece of shit because the friends I was living with at that point in time, it was sort of just like a part-time thing of like, you know, stay here until you get your feet under you and then we'll figure it out. And I remember like going through the process of fighting for Lucy and then hitting that point where I couldn't even put her out that night to go pee because I was so fucking intoxicated blackout. And I just remember waking up like, you fucking piece of shit. Like, it's not good to talk to yourself like that. But in that state of mind, that's how I was talking to myself. And that was the breaking point where it was like, you just fought for her. Like, if you actually are going to give her a good life, you have to fucking get your shit together. And so that was December 1st. And I just pretty much decided right then and there that like, I can't do this anymore. So it, that's when things officially started. So I just cut weed and alcohol the same day. Don't know if I'd recommend that. Not going to lie. That was fucking... That was,
yeah, I'm like, we, no,
that was horrible. And then it was a rough couple weeks. I'm not going to lie because two weeks after that, so December 13th in Canada, we went into our third lockdown. So going to third lockdown at this point, we're already fucking miserable at that point. It's December in Canada. It's cold as fuck. It's dark. It's just life sucks the last year. So a week after that, we find out that, so our old gym, we found out that our landlord sold the gym out from under us during that time. This is December 19th. And it's just like, fucking hell. Like all the things that could have possibly just shit hit the fucking fan.
Everything.
And that was truthfully the night that I was like, just fucking drink, just fuck it, whatever. And at that point I was walking like 25 to 30,000 steps a day with Lucy. Cause it was the only thing that I could do to basically stay moving to prevent me from sitting down, getting bored, and then having that serious, serious craving to drink and smoke.
You have to just distract yourself. Yeah.
Grab a leash. We got the fuck out of there. I think I walked for like a long time.
So I want the Max that started to develop the drinking problem. Like what was your relationship with alcohol? And it can be like a short snippet or it can be long, whatever you want to give us. But how did your relationship with alcohol start?
So very much like you, actually. I was a binger. So big time binger. So early on, like in my early 20s, it wasn't something that I did on a daily basis by any means, but it was every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So at that point too, when you're young, you're going to the bars, you're trying to pick up chicks. I was incredibly, incredibly insecure. And I got diagnosed with ADHD last year. And it's interesting now kind of looking back and being able to sort of, it's almost like piecing the puzzle together of why I did a lot of things that I did do. Mm-hmm. So for me, like I get super hyper stimulated. Like I fucking hate the bar. Like it's too loud. It's too many people. There's too much shit going on. I get so overstimulated that I basically just go like hyper focus mode. And so for me, the only way I could feel quote unquote comfortable in those scenarios was to get absolutely fucking bombed. And I mean, it wasn't that I was actually comfortable. It was just that I was so numbed out that I made it seem like I was comfortable kind of thing, or I was like having a good time. And it was just solely so that I could fit in with the friend group that I was hanging out with at the time, who all had a
totally,
you know, unhealthy relationship with alcohol. They were just better at handling it than I was. So that was probably kind of you know, 18 to 25, give or take. And it was when I was 25 when I moved out on my own for the first time. So I'd been living with a friend, him and his now wife. And so it was when I moved out on my own, like living alone for the first time, was when it got really bad. Because even just, you know, it's not that my friend and his now wife would have said anything, because you're at that age too, it's kind of like, oh, you're having fun. It's a great time, blah, blah, blah. We drinking, we fucking Sunday fun day, all that bullshit. Like,
yeah, you know, everyone's, I don't want to like use that but like everyone's doing it and no one's recognizing that the amount that they're consuming is an issue at all.
Yeah. I mean, from a marketing standpoint, alcohol has been marketed to us since we were born for so many years. They do a fucking phenomenal job of it. So you just overlook the intent behind it. Even if you're not having a great time doing it, you're just, you know, you get sucked into that culture. You don't want to be ostracized, especially at that age when you are incredibly insecure and you haven't, you know, done any therapy, psychology, anything that would promote you having a healthy relationship with yourself, having high self-worth. So it's easy to get sucked into that culture. So when I was 25 and I moved out, that was when I got bad. Because that's when not only did I really start to lean into scotch, I also was alone. And it was like there was no one to keep any sort of tabs on me. At the time, I was making decent money. And the condo that I was living in was a client of mine. And it was like $600 a month. She was like a super long-term client of mine, quite well off. And she was like, you just rent out my condo. Like, oh, you just pay the fees for it and you're good. So it's paying six, nice. Right at the time in my head, I'm like, fucking perfect. Like that's that much more drinking and smoking money. Like that's just how my brain worked back then. Not, you know, don't save more money. Just fucking smoke and drink more, because that'll make you happy. So that's when it got bad. And from the ages of 25 to, I mean, essentially 30, I was drinking, I mean, on average a 40 a week.
What's a 40? Because we have like fits.
I'm trying to think of what that would be in America.
I think a fifth is like 54 ounces.
You know how there's like the little bottle, then there's the big bottle, and then there's the bigger bottle? It's that one. Then there's like the 60, like then the 120. Gallon? Yeah. So a lot.
We're just going to learn the metric system really quick.
Perfect.
I know. I'm like, is a Canadian bottle... I can't. Okay, we will update the show notes how much a 40 is when we post this.
We have 40s, but they're like big bottles of beer.
Yeah, so we have like Colt 45, like that disgusting shit. Yeah, so it's bigger than that. Like it's, or maybe it's about the same. Maybe it's about the same, but it's hard. But it's hard alcohol, not beer.
Yeah. Wow. Ooh. Yeah. Anyways, so can I ask a question about your parents?
Yeah.
How was their relationship with alcohol?
So my dad was an RCMP officer. So that's equivalent of a police officer.
Okay.
So, and my dad was specifically he entered his career as CBRN, but he was basically bloodstained. So easiest way of describing this is like, you know, the show CSI.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much what my dad did.
Oh, cool.
So as you can imagine, when it's not the TV dramatized version of it, you get pretty fucked up watching, you know, doing that type of career, because essentially he was one of the first people on the majority of murder scenes in Western Canada.
Wow.
So my dad was by no means an alcoholic, like by no means, but he drank, you know, I don't know, probably 2 to 5 ounces of scotch a night kind of thing. And it was never, it was never a problem, but it was at the same time too, you know, you do the math on 2 to 5 ounces a night, quite a few years. It's not a small amount of alcohol at the same time, but at the same time, I definitely don't fucking blame him based off of the shit that he saw. So
totally. It's just like a coping mechanism at the end of the day. Like you're just decompressing and it's with alcohol. And I feel like a lot of my drinking was stress related. Like when I would have a particularly difficult day, like even if I wasn't getting blackout, I was the same. I would like have 2 beers, you know, every night kind of a thing.
Well, see, in a way that I masked it was because I smoked so much weed. So I had basically figured out, and I had dealt with pretty severe disordered eating for many years as well. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who has, you know, dealt with disordered eating in any capacity, you realize that they kind of bleed into each other. A lot of the times, if you do struggle with an eating disorder, it's not just an eating disorder. It's typically kind of paired with something else. And so for me I always felt that being a personal trainer, I always felt like I was on this pedestal that I had to look a certain way, because if I looked a certain way, then people would never assume that I had a problem. And so I fell into this trap when I was living on my own. That's basically like intermittent fasting kind of first became more mainstream. And I figured out essentially that if I just didn't eat all day, that if I came home and I drank, you know, 4 to 8 ounces of scotch on an empty stomach and I smoked a joint to two joints, like I would essentially be as fucked up as I could be without consuming enough volume of alcohol that I would be hungover the next day. So I was the textbook functioning alcoholic addict because I had basically came up with an idea or came up with a plan that I could get as fucked up as I wanted to be without actually having the repercussions the next day.
Yeah, you're like formulating it. Like, how can I still make this work?
And then I would binge eat on top of that because I would get stoned. And then at that point, I literally haven't eaten all day. And, you know, again, in my head, I'm like, cool, I've consumed zero fucking calories. I can eat 2,000 to 3,000 calories of absolute shit food.
Oh, I relate to this so much.
Yeah, I know. And honestly, thank you for talking about it, Max. We have really wanted to cover like disordered eating on the pod. It is such a sensitive, you know, subject. And I think we have a guest coming on who is a woman who's going to talk about it. So I really appreciate you offering some like male perspective because I don't think that's often talked about. So
yeah, it's definitely much more prevalent than I think a lot of people and society think. Mind you, a lot of men don't talk about it, and a lot of men are so, not to shit on men, but they're very unaware of the fact that it's disordered eating. And again, it goes back to the intent behind it, because anything can actually be abused. And in this case, it was, you know, intermittent fasting, because I literally had formulated that if I didn't eat all day and then I consumed all my calories at night, that I could still stay relatively lean. People would still assume that I was a healthy personal trainer. And God forbid, personal trainers don't have addictions and alcoholism and eating disorders. And just like actually, doctors, we all do.
Yeah, we're all fucked up.
Yep, pretty much. Dude, totally. Pretty much.
Yeah. I want to keep diving into your story, but I just wanted to call out this theme that I've been hearing that's really resonating with me, which is just intent. Because I think that there's so much conversation and just in terms of like defining what sobriety is and what addiction is. And I think that's going to be personal to each person. But I saw this post the other day that was like someone who's just posting about getting a lot of scrutiny for saying that they're sober, but other people saying that they're not sober because they still watch too much Netflix, or they're not sober because the like time spent on your phone, the like hours of use or whatever it's called, like is, you know, over X amount of hours. And so it's just interesting that like, I don't think it's like cutting everything out and literally living like a Buddhist monk. Love that for whoever's doing it. But I think we also need to be grounded in reality and realize that like, if you are taking a substance with this like intent behind it, and there's none of this like baggage or feelings, and you have the experience and then you like move on with your life, then that's kind of like freedom from the addiction cycle. But if you're even like me currently right now and just smoking every single night without even thinking about it because it's what I do, that's just the like dopamine hit, kind of like something else is at play there, that like some sort of cycle needs to be broken. So anyway, I love that you've brought that up and have talked about like what that's meant for you and how you've kind of navigated that as you've tried to get kind of the things that aren't serving you out of your life. So
yeah, it's very interesting. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and it was quoting Andrew Huberman. I can't remember the exact line, but essentially his definition of addiction, where it's the narrowing of essentially pleasures in your life, where, you know, depending on what the substance or non-substance may be, again, whether it be social media, it's like, when you think about it, is it taking away from everything else in your life, right? When, like, how much mental energy are you putting towards that is actually taking away from the things that you once previously enjoyed, but you've essentially narrowed down your pleasure response to this one, you know, substance and again, or non-substance. And the reason I keep like saying the substance and or non-substance is because we live in a world that there's, you know, a lot of non-substance addictions that we can gravitate towards. Like our cell phones are one of them, right? And like, it's one of those ones, it's a struggle because there is a ripple effect that comes from it, both positive and negative, right? It's very, very interesting. And I was listening, like I said, to your guys' episode earlier, and you had mentioned, Katie, that your dad said that like, oh, you're not an alcoholic. You're not a real alcoholic. Yeah. And I resonated with that because my ex-girlfriend at the time had said like her, basically in her situation from a trauma standpoint, her grandpa had essentially drank himself to death. So in her viewpoint, me drinking a 40 a week, you know, you're not an alcoholic. Like, who are you to say you're an alcoholic? And my whole message ever since from day one has been everything is on a spectrum. So in a very simple way of looking at it, if this is a scale of one, this is a 10. You don't need to be a 7, 8, 9, or 10 before you start actually dealing with the problem at hand. Because the reality is that if you are a 7, 8, 9, 10, it's going to be fucking hard to turn back the clocks and go this way. So this can apply for anxiety. This can apply for depression. This can apply for just about fucking anything. If you're a 2 or 3 and you can recognize that now, start working on yourself now. Because if that can prevent you from getting to a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you're going to save yourself a fucking lot of time, effort, energy, money, resources, all the above.
Right.
And who fucking cares if someone thinks that you're not an alcoholic or someone other than you thinks you don't have a problem? Because again, intent. Only you know what you're doing behind closed doors.
Well, and there's something too to be said about addressing addiction as a blanket statement and knowing that it transfers for some people to different outlets, right? Like, it's not that, oh, I'm addicted to alcohol. Oh, now I'm addicted to weed. Oh, now I'm addicted to TV. Oh, now I'm addicted to my phone. That's not it. It's what's going on underneath, right? Like, and you can become addicted to scrutinizing yourself, picking your life apart.
Hi.
Yeah. And then what happens is you're actually numbing out to escape, right? Like, you're setting yourself up for this failure, like, cycle. And so for me, whatever it is that I'm doing, because I do operate on the anxious side of the scale, not the depressive side of the scale. And that can be really hard because I can get stuck on things, on self-help, on self-work, on, you know, taking this out of my life, adding this to my life, and just like really fixing and working on things all of the time. So it's like what you said, because is that addiction in itself taking away from enjoying my life and just being present and being here? Because that is really what the goal is, regardless. It's like just bringing your baseline back to like being present and enjoying your life. And that's the whole goal. It's not to be perfect, you know, it's not to put labels on yourself. Mm-hmm. It's to finding out like what your purpose is and like what lights you up. And I think, yeah, so that's just, I want to go there too, because like this can be looked at from so many different standpoints and I see all of it, you know, and I've experienced a lot of that spectrum too. So
yeah. And that's one thing, like you said, it was being present, right? Because a lot of times too, this is super common when people do transfer addictions. So they go from a substance addiction, whether it be booze, drugs, alcohol, whatever it may be. Exercise, super fucking common one, right?
Hi, it's me.
But right, and it's funny because it's one of those ones, but like, oh yeah, but it's just I'm just running 10 kilometers a day. It's like, yeah, but
no.
what are you like the literal and figurative, like what are you running from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's your thoughts, yeah. Your feelings, your trauma, your emotions, all of the unresolved things that you have not dealt with. Yes, you're doing it in a healthier coping mechanism. Absolutely. Not gonna deny that. But at the same time, what happens, and this is, I mean, shitty timing for you right now, Katie, but what happens when your outlet, if it's, exercise related, what happens if you get injured? Because that's super common when people go to the extremes of, you know, addiction, substance addiction, to Ironman training, super long distance running, things like that. Like, it's almost inevitable that there will be injuries. And if you haven't kind of bridged that gap of like substance versus exercise addiction, what happens when you lose this outlet? Because if this is what's keeping you sober, what happens when this is gone?
Right. I wanted to say something else too about this, but I think that I lost it. So I will circle back.
No, I'm sticking on this, like, because I'm like, okay, well, how do we not just like transfer from one thing to the other? And I think what you said, Max, about like focusing in on the thing, on like alcohol or whatever, as like your like quote unquote like pleasure center or whatever, that's weird. I don't like that term. I'll think of something else.
I don't think I did.
No. But the things on, you know, like when you're zeroed in on alcohol or whatever your coping mechanism is, and then you kind of aren't able to experience those other things that make your life great, I think what's hard is especially when you're at like a 7, 8, or 9 on that scale, you don't even know what those things are or what's even possible to feel outside of that. So I'm really curious to know, like when you started kind of cutting those main focuses out, what things did you notice or like enjoy or start to gravitate towards that were outside of that like narrow kind of addiction spectrum? We're calling it an addiction narrow spectrum. We're not calling it a pleasure center. Okay, cool. Done.
Love that.
I mean, to be quite frank, I didn't fucking enjoy anything that first month.
Yeah, the first month that sucked first so month, hard.
Oh my God, that first month was fucking miserable between like it just not sleeping, not eating. I think I lost like 20 pounds in the first 2.5 weeks because wow. I was one of those. Well, and Katie and I talked about this actually in our consultation, was like, I said, wouldn't eat all day and then I would smoke weed. And then it's that truth behind like, again, what are you using the weed for? So for me, it was like, I wouldn't eat food without weed. That was straight up. I would not eat food without weed. So then when you do cut weed, you realize how addicted to it you were because of the fact that if you cannot eat food without this, like, there's something deeper than you may be acknowledging. So for that first month, I mean, truthfully, the first 6 months, like I think one of the coolest things about getting sober is it allows you to start living your life and figuring out what is fun for you. Because kind of like we spoke about before we hopped on here, like I'm fucking weird. But like for so many years, I didn't want to be labeled as weird. I didn't want to ostracize myself and, you know, do the weird things that I now enjoy doing because I was so insecure and I was so caught up on being the people pleaser and being someone who got along with everyone that I just, you know, basically numbed out everything that I wanted to do. And I just did everything that I could to fit in. And I know that like, so as mentioned, my dad was an RCMP officer. So one of the things that we dealt with as kids was I was transferred. I think I moved like 7 times before I was 12. So looking back.
Me too.
Right?
I was 6 times before I was 12.
So looking back and like, again, educating myself intensely over the last 2 years from like a psychology, childhood trauma, childhood environment that standpoint, like if you have no stability as a child, that's going to then come out in life and it's going to have repercussions in some way, shape or form. So for me, I used to call myself a chameleon because I literally could fucking make friends and I still can make friends with anyone.
And I don't want to anymore.
No. And that's exactly it.
I don't want to.
And it's like, you know what?
Bye.
It's so true. And it's one of those ones like, there's been pros and cons. It's served me greatly in my business, in my earlier, you know, stages of business. Like I could fucking literally go talk to anyone and I could grow a business because I could talk to anyone. However, it also basically prevented me from ever actually acknowledging what I do and don't like because I only did things that fit in with the crowd. And when you move from this province to this province to this province, like what's cool here is not cool here. So I drastically shifted every 6 to 18 months what I would do, the clothes that I would wear, how I would do my hair, like fucking literally you name it, I would change it based off of the province that I was living in because I wanted to fit in. Because when you're the fucking new kid every 6 to 18 months, it fucking sucks. Like it straight up sucks.
We've talked about this on the pod that like oftentimes the trauma that we experienced, or let's call it trial and tribulation, right, versus trauma, it's not trauma for everyone. That's often where we mine our gifts. And it sucks.
Yep.
It fucking sucks. It's like, and now that we're adults, like now that I'm this age, I can acknowledge like that was painful. And now I have this like beautiful skill and I can unlearn it because I love myself and I know who I am. So like, it's cool because it just comes in all of these layers, like resentment. And then, you know, there's just like so many different aspects of it. And yeah, I can relate to what you're saying so much. Yeah.
And the peeling back the onion analogy is like so fucking true for sobriety because like, even when you think you figured things out, something gets triggered and you're like, oh, fuck me. You gotta peel back like another fucking layer. And then this whole shit unravels and then you start piecing more things together. It's cool, but it's one of those ones like, you know, it's a journey. Like it's, you're in it for a ride. And you're gonna learn lots about yourself.
So I just remembered what I was gonna say. So you know how we were talking about when we bounce from like, you know, overuse of this substance and overuse of this and overuse of this, right? Like we're babies. So in the first, like we're getting to know ourselves for 2.5 years without substance. And so sometimes I think that, especially online, can paint this like beautiful picture of what like being sober is. And it's a lifelong learn. There's no, oh, we're just not addicted to anything anymore. We're human beings. And we live in a society that is putting things that are addictive in front of us all of the fucking time to
on
get our
purpose,
time and our energy and our money.
Yep. To make money. Yeah. I work in advertising. So there are million-dollar budgets to get these things in front of your faces and to get you to use them often.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to say. And it totally applies to this. It is an onion. And so to anyone listening that's like, oh, well, now I have to quit weed or now I have to do this. It's like, no, you don't have to, but it is going to keep coming up. Like things are just going to keep coming up for you. And like being able to accept that and then doing whatever you choose to do with it is like the first part. Acceptance is just the first part that like you're not going to get it right at first. There's just no such thing.
And if you try it longer than a month because it's going to be so shitty. So don't just like stop smoking for a day. Yeah. I'm talking to myself. And then be like, I hate this. This sucks. So yeah, there's some patience.
Yeah. And I'm on day 82 today, like without weed again since January. And it's exactly like the first month fucking sucks. There's no getting around it. You're not sleeping. You're not eating. You're going through withdrawals. Like it's not a fun time, but again, it goes back to like two things. One of which Katie says like acceptance and awareness, right? Like awareness is technically the first step into actually making any sort of change. Because if you have any awareness and from like a cognitive dissonance standpoint, if you ever do something, again, social media, dating, porn, substance, whatever, and there's just any sort of awareness that like just this doesn't feel good, you don't have to deal with it now, but like just be aware, like Kaylee said, like it's gonna keep coming back. Like, you know, especially if you're in your early 20s, like if I'm 32 turning 33, like I still look at myself as very young and I still have so much to figure out. And it just makes me wonder, like, had I listened to myself and not been, you know, so gravitated towards fitting in from the ages of 23 to 25, like where would I be now in terms of just like even self-awareness, self-knowledge, self-love, self-worth, all the above.
Dude, I just keep thinking how like stoked I am that this information is getting to 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds and younger than that. We did an episode with Annalie Roberts, who's super fucking cool. If you don't follow her, you should. And she had a reel go viral, a TikTok that went viral, like millions of viewers. And my little sister at 15 years old in Michigan sent it to me. It was like walking into a hangover-free Saturday. She was like sea walking.
That's awesome.
And my 15-year-old sister sent it to me. And it was like 3 months after I quit drinking alcohol. Then Anna and I connected. And then a year and a half later, she comes on the podcast. And like all because of my like, my little sister is getting alcohol-free fucking content in her TikTok feed. Like, what?
It's fucking great.
There were college-age students at our pop-up, which was so cool, and I immediately tried to be their friends.
Well, and even just the push, like, I know it's much bigger in the States right now. I was just in Dallas, but, like, the non-alcohol market of drinks, and obviously Chelsea does a lot of work in that area, and, like, it's becoming a lot more prominent, and it's great, like, you can go if you like going to the bar, like you can go to the bar and just drink mocktails if you want. Like you don't have to get fucked up. If you like that environment, you don't need to seclude yourself from that environment. You just don't need to use drugs and alcohol if you don't want to.
Yeah. We just were asked to be featured in the Nightlife edition of our like the Eugene Weekly, which is our local like cool newspaper, you know. And the alcohol-free portion was the front page of the Nightlife edition. Fuck,
that's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was like so cool that our friends over at High Street Tonics looped us into that. She did our Dry January 2 years ago. Nice. And she like name dropped us. And it's just the fact that the Swizzle, which is a Nightlife edition, chose the alcohol free movement as the front page just goes to show that there is actual change happening.
Yeah,
I grew up in Michigan. I was going to say this earlier. And I had a friend from Canada and we would go up there when we turned 18 so we could drink because we just would cross Detroit. Yeah. And I forgot that the drinking age is younger there. It's still 18, yeah?
Still 18, yeah.
Wow.
Fuck, like you don't know shit all at 18. Like looking back on it, like fuck, I was so dumb back then. Like it's unbelievable that we were allowed to drink and do whatever the hell we wanted.
No, so bad.
So crazy. I want to hear, Max, like how you got yourself through that shitty part. You obviously had Lucy, which was a huge motivator for you. But like how did you push through? What were some things if someone's like, okay, I'm listening to this podcast and they just keep telling me the first month sucks. Like, what were some things that like helped you through that moment? And like, what are you excited about now? And how are you like just feeling about now and the things that have come up for you since knocking this off?
So for me personally, and actually I heard you guys mention this in the podcast, like, you know, how awesome is this podcast for you two to stay accountable to staying sober?
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Without it. Don't know.
So for me, I came out publicly, it would have been like October 15th, I think it was. And that's when the whole shitstorm of my relationship blowing up. And so for me, like when December 1st hit, like I leaned hard into posting about it. And basically my whole purpose behind doing that was to pretty much show people like getting sober is fucking shitty, but it's like the best thing you can possibly do. And just the reality behind it, right? Like not trying to glorify it and make it seem like it's, you know, it's all fucking rainbows and butterflies and it's awesome. Like the first little bit is rough, but for me, expressing it and just expressing the feelings that I was feeling for pretty much the first time ever helped me immensely, because that's my whole Instagram was curated. Like I wasn't even talking about fitness. Fucking, I ran a fucking fitness training company. I didn't even talk about fitness. I literally like, that's probably why we ended up connecting to Katie, was the fact that I was posting more so about alcohol and sobriety and drug addiction at that point in time than I was about fitness.
I'm sure. And then like the two worlds for me collide so much. Yeah. And it was nice to see one that represents both, because so many fitness accounts on social media talk like positively about alcohol or like show you how to cheat the system with alcohol. So
I just unfollowed someone today because I signed up for their newsletter just as I do. And they're like, my fat loss 101 program is out now. And so much misinformation, by the way. Just so thank you, Max, for speaking the truth. But I was scrolling through the newsletter and there was a photo of them like eating dinner with a glass of wine. And I'm at the point right now where I'm just like, this is not aligned. This person's not for me.
Yeah. And so for me, like, posting about it was honestly one of the best things I could do, like that kept me accountable. And that's a large reason why I wanted to come out publicly in the first place. And for me, again, too, like I'm the baby of two older sisters. Like majority of my clients are women. Like I just get along better with women, truthfully. But so for me, I don't know, my psychologist and I have talked about this and kind of, you know, gone back and forth on it, but it's like baby child syndrome, where like so much of you just wants to be heard. And so for me, it felt right to do so. So by no means do I tell anybody that like, hey, you want to get sober, go post about it online. You'll feel super good in doing so. Me, it felt right. And for me, that's what I wanted to do, because I wanted to be heard. I wanted to be seen, whatever it may be. And for me, it felt right. So for me, that's what helped me a lot. One thing actually early on, because when we went into lockdown on December 12th there, one thing that I did that has helped me personally and business-wise immensely was that I made like basically a pledge to myself that I was going to do an online, like a free workout every single morning on live, Instagram live, during the third lockdown. So for me, it was a way to keep myself accountable, because every single morning I went live at 9 a.m. I just worked out and I basically gave anyone who wanted to join in like a free workout to do at home. We were all in lockdown. We're all stuck at home. Like, so for me, it was like a way to stay accountable. It was also a way to start growing somewhat of an audience as well for my business. So it was, you know, kind of layered, but the predominant like factor there was to keep me accountable, because if I didn't show up tomorrow at 9 a.m., like, oh fuck, what's Max been doing? Like literally on Christmas Day, I went live at 9 a.m. because—
Wow, that's so cute. Aww.
Back to what you were talking about earlier, actually too, Kaylee, was like COVID was kind of a blessing in that sense. When I got sober December 1st, because of the fact that we didn't have, you know, quote unquote Christmas that year. Like we literally had Zoom Christmas because we were in lockdown in Canada. So I, looking back on it, like thankfully wasn't around my family over Christmas that year. And honestly, if I was, like, I don't know if I would have stayed sober. Like Christmas is a pretty stressful time for me with my family, being the baby, being the only one who actually acknowledges that we have substance problems in the family. It's tough. It's very triggering to be around. So I was actually thankful that we were on lockdown during that. But I literally went on fucking live at 9 a.m. in my house coat and just drank coffee and just like talked to people who were there.
I love that.
I was like, hey, yeah, like this is my Christmas this year. Like I'm not going to work out, but if I'm just going to hear, like it's day 25 now at this point, like I'm just going to kind of talk to you guys and let you know how I'm feeling. Everyone for the most part had been, you know, had been joining for like 2.5 weeks at that point. So they, you know, I'm talking about how I'm feeling as I'm like sweating out withdrawals and everything like that. So it was very raw and it was very just, you know, authentic. And that's kind of what I've wanted to continue doing moving forward. And so for me, it was about 90 days before things started to get, I don't want to say more enjoyable, but just more clarity is probably a better word for it, where you start to realize like, oh, wow, like I didn't even enjoy doing those things. I just did them to fit in. And then it, you know, that's how kind of how it starts is you do them to fit in. And then over time, the psychological and physiological addiction grows to the point where you then, you know, need that substance.
Yeah. What did 60-day alcohol-free Max do when he felt triggered or like he was going to have a drink?
I walked like a lunatic. I honestly, well, like
did
I said,
you,
I
did you call anyone?
No. So yeah, no, like to be honest, and I know that support is so incredibly important. I had joined a few Facebook groups early on.
Oh, Facebook.
Which truthfully, yeah, like which truthfully was like looking back on it, there was some positives that came from it. There was, I would probably argue that there was more negatives that came from it. Like it was a very, very fucked up dynamic in some of them. Like, and this is where I talk a lot about like the difference of sobriety and recovery. So in those groups, I ran into a couple sobriety warriors where almost similar to what your dad had said, like, oh, pff, like you fucking just smoked weed, fucking loser. Like I've been clean of heroin for 7 years. Like
I lost my whole family times three.
Yeah. And, like fucking bravo. But this is where it's such an interesting.
Your Canadian accent is just so good. Bravo.
Like, yeah, well done. You one-upped me. Like you have more addiction than I do. Like, cool. But so it was weird getting that type of feedback in some of those groups. But then I've now kind of since learned too the difference, and I recognize it now more, the difference of sobriety and recovery, where when people are sober, but you haven't done anything to acknowledge you as a person. So just because you're clean of substance, but you're still cheating on your partner, you still neglect your kids, you're still kind of a piece of shit of a human. Yeah. Great. Good job. You're sober. You're sober of alcohol and substances. That's great. When you're in recovery, you're actively dealing with yourself and the reasons why you were using in the first place.
Yes.
And that's how I kind of distinguish the two, because I do think there's a big difference between sobriety and recovery.
I like that. And recovery is not a word I've ever identified with until recently, when I realized that you can be recovering from just your childhood. Like you can be recovering from just a bad experience you had with a partner when you were a teenager. Like there is so much room for growth and compassion in recovery. Whereas I feel like it gets a bad, you know what I mean? Sometimes people are like, oh, recovery, like where'd they send you? You know? And it's like, no, like I'm just doing it with my therapist and like it with our podcast and like diving in and learning about myself. And so I really appreciate that distinction because love my dad, bless him. This is the best version of him that I've ever seen. You know, he works at AA program. He is a sponsor and I don't know that. I mean, I know I've never received an apology from him, like amends from him, which is one of the steps. I know he has done that though. With other people, and I know he's done it maybe not a couple times, but just not his oldest or any of the other children, but it's fine. I'm sorry, Dad, if you're listening to this. I do love you.
I hope my family can't get out of here.
Yeah, I hope my parents can't.
I know. My mom definitely can, and she's like actively chooses not to listen because she can't even handle me like on the phone. So she definitely can't handle me. I am unhinged on the pod. But yeah, and sometimes I think, you know, also we're so fortunate. Like, I know that I'm doing this work because my dad can't. Like, he might not have the capacity. And that's okay because I get to. And I've kind of just, you know, like through the podcast, learned to love that. At the beginning of this, I was super pissed. 2 years. I mean, we've been doing this for what, a year and a half? I was so mad. I was so resentful. And that's like a part of the process, though. I work with an SRT, like, I always say it wrong. I call it the spiritual release therapist, but that's not what it stands for. And she had me do this reparenting mantra for 30 days where I would just talk to myself about releasing the belief that my parents didn't love me and like saying that out loud to myself. And just in that alone, I was like, I am a new person. I love my parents. Bless them. Like, I am so excited to have a relationship with them in a specific capacity mm-hmm. that I now know that they're capable of. And I am loved without what I needed from them.
And you said the word, I actually wrote it down just before you said it, but resentful. And I know a big thing, yeah. like I think anyone who does cut substance all goes through the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because you initially, you feel so hurt that you think blaming someone, a parent, a loved one, an ex, you know, whatever it may be, is going to make you feel better. It's not. it's not, right? Like, you don't recognize that at first. And like, I had to go through the same thing. Like, I was like, well, fuck, my parents did this. They moved, made me move. And it's like, well, my parents just raised me with the tools that they had.
Right.
Right. Like, a generational trauma, it's the reason it's called generational trauma. It's not that my parents actively chose
to fuck you up.
To raise, yeah, to raise me the way. And it's not like my dad was like, I'm going to take this transfer because I know that 10 years down the road is going to fuck Max up.
Like, hate this.
Like, my dad's predominant intention behind taking those transfers was to actually move up the ranks of the RCMP faster, because my dad grew up in a household that had basically fucking no money. So my dad's interpretation of being a good father was to be a good provider.
Right.
When you go down that path, you don't realize that just because you're a good provider from a financial standpoint doesn't mean you actually create any place of emotional stability, you know, vulnerability, honesty, boundaries, anything along those lines. So by no means do I, you know, blame him now. Like, he was literally doing what he thought was best for me to give me the best possible life. Mm. He just didn't know, right? Like, that's the thing, is like, we have to be cycle breakers. So if I do end up having children, which I don't really think I want children, I'm not going to lie. It's a pretty fucked up world right now. And I don't know. I like my dog and yes. probably going to have a couple dogs.
Yeah.
But anyways, you have to be the cycle breaker, right? So I can recognize that now. And I can also understand that if I do end up having a family, just being a provider isn't enough. And that's not what I would let myself be. And that was, like, to go back to the original getting sober, like, a huge component of that was there was this pressure for me to have a family, full well knowing I'm $40,000 in debt and my gym just fucking closed. Like, I need to make some fucking money here if I'm going to have a family and be a provider. And this is, again, 2 and a bit years ago, before going to piles and piles of therapy. I've done energetic therapy, healing. I've done psych, like, you fucking name the approach. I've done, what the fuck is it called?
Have you done the tapping?
The EMDR?
Yeah.
I haven't done the tapping, but I've done, what the fuck can I think of it? Like, past life regression therapy, like, all kinds of crazy shit.
Oh, yeah. The ancestral, yeah. Like, yeah, cool.
So cool. I'm like, ladies, are you hearing this?
There are men out there doing the work.
Well, and it's,
this is actually an episode about Max being single. And
this is basically just a giant dating platform now, actually. But
yes.
But for me, it's like, and this is what I talk about this on my platform too, is just, there's not like, it's the whole AA thing. It's not right. A one size fits all approach. Like, you can do whatever the fuck you need to do to get sober and to start working on yourself. Not even necessarily sober, just to start working on yourself. Like, just because, you know, your mom went to a therapist doesn't mean you need to go to a therapist. You can go to a counselor. You can go to a life coach. You can go to any realm of healing that will work for you. Try it, right? And don't be afraid to experiment with more than just one. And this is, I know, like, psychologists get a bad rep for this too. And it's like, oh, I went to saw this one psychologist, but I just didn't like him. So I just didn't go back.
That's such a common thing. People get scared from one bad therapy and they don't realize that. Yeah.
Yep. And it's unfortunate, because there's, like any profession, there's shitty doctors, there's shitty coaches, there's shitty physios, there's shitty dentists, there's shitty people in every single industry. So you have to be open to trying more than just one.
And sometimes it's our fear.
Totally.
Like, it's not even that they're bad. Like, I saw this therapist 3 times and the entire time I cried and talked about my dad, and I didn't go to my fourth session because I was so fucking sick of myself. I was like, I can't do this.
I distinctly remember my first psychologist. I went in with, like, literally arms crossed, and it was about 10 minutes before the guy was like, you realize you're paying $200 an hour to be here, right? Like,
yeah.
You just sitting here with your arms crossed,
like, problem.
What the fuck? What do you expect to come from this if you're just going to sit here with your arms crossed and not totally. Open up about the things that you're struggling with?
And sometimes that's part of the process.
Totally.
It's just like, you are where you need to be, and just like having the awareness, like you said, and getting curious about it is that's the shit that we talk about.
Well, curiosity is like a couple books I would definitely recommend would be anything that Gabor Mate has written. He is
Fucking the trauma doctor,
absolute man. But like a couple keywords he uses is like acceptance, curiosity, and compassion. And essentially without those three, you're going to have a really hard time, not even just getting sober, but just working on yourself. Because if you don't allow yourself the space for acceptance, curiosity, and compassion, it's going to be really, really, really fucking difficult to make the changes that need to be changed.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to that resentment piece that you were talking about. And something that was coming in for me with that was that like the capacity in which you resent other people is typically the resentment you have for self and the decisions that you've made and like what your behavior is. And that goes up with compassion too. Like we're only, you know, capable of judging others as deeply as we judge ourselves for our own actions. And so like, I love that. I think it's so important. And I worked with a coach who taught us about compassion and curiosity and acceptance. And like that shit changed my life. And it was the second, like it was after I quit alcohol that I was able to start to dive into those like methodologies. And I need the reminders all the time.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't just heal because you know it.
I just applied to do a course with Gabor called Compassionate Inquiry. It's a 6-month program. So yeah, I just applied.
Okay, well, come on and spill the tea after you get it for us.
I will.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because especially with my life coaching, like my business online started as a fitness-based coaching company. Like I did my life coaching cert about 6 years ago. And I mean, full disclosure, I was in a place that I wasn't ready to work on myself and look inward. So I didn't, you know, I got the certification, but did I get that much out of it? Honestly, probably not where I was at. But since then, between the readings of Gabor and just, I mean, you guys can't see my bookshelf, but it's just literally packed full of psychology, childhood psychology, because as a life coach, like as a life coach / fitness coach, the reality behind anyone's fitness results is it's linked to your mental health. And it's linked to the psychological aspect. It's not just a physiological response. And I talked about this yesterday on my post of just saying like, no one just actively chooses to not eat the adequate amount of protein, to do their steps, to do their workouts and do the things that need to be done. They're not hitting those targets because there's something that is being unmanaged in their life. So whether it be their alcohol use, their drug use, their sleep schedule, their relationship stress, their career stress, their financial instability, whatever it may be, it's those outlying factors that are causing you to not be able to be successful on your health and fitness journey. So I started in the fitness realm. I was mentioned I've done this for 13 years, but in the last year specifically, like as I've gotten longer without alcohol and I've done more work on myself from the different modalities of healing, like that was the biggest turning point for me, was recognizing like no one's just choosing to not hit the numbers. Like fitness is fucking actually really simple. Why are they missing their targets? And that's when I started to transition my business to being more like, realistically, it's probably like 30% fitness based, 70% life coaching based, where before it was 70-30. It's like, this is what gets people the results, because if they don't have this aspect of life figured out, this is never going to coincide with where they want to be.
100%. I couldn't agree more with you.
And that's why I'm stoked for Compassionate Inquiry.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you. So I was going to like round things off with being like, what's next for you? That's clearly it. Like, what are you excited about? You also already gave some really great tips for people in terms of like things you check out and read. But if you were to like, yeah, kind of shout out where you're at, what you're excited about, and any sort of like final last words of advice or encouragement for anyone who's just trying to get rid of anything. Any bullshit, anything that's not serving them, like what would you spout off for them?
So I was recently in Dallas for a fitness conference, and I actually was in Phoenix in December for another conference. And one of my biggest inadvertent takeaways from Phoenix was defining what you want. So I always look at things in the realm of like health, wealth, and relationships. And essentially it's kind of like the tripod analogy. So if you can define what you want with your health, if you can define what you want with your relationships, you can define what you want with your wealth, it becomes much easier to actually achieve those things because you know what you're striving to get. And so what I mean by that is when you go to a conference like that, and I mean, social media in a nutshell is like the constant pursuit of more and never feeling like you have enough. So you leave this fitness conference where you just heard so-and-so doctor speak about how they have 6 fucking 7-figure businesses and blah, 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 blah. They have this many employees and they're the shit, blah, blah, blah. If you don't want that with your life, but you leave that type of environment thinking like, I have to do XYZ now to accomplish these goals. Well, if those goals don't align with your core values and they don't align with what you've defined as what you want with your life, you're going to be pretty fucking miserable when you ever achieve that, if you do achieve that. So what's really interesting, and I've been doing this a lot lately, and even when I came home, so I co-owned the gym with two of the partners. When I came home from Dallas, I sat them both down and said, like, what do we want? Like, the three of us as a business need to define what we want. Because if I want this and Tony wants this and Ty wants this, we're going to fail. Like, we're not ever going to be successful, because if you want this, I want this, Tony wants this, we're going to end up trying to pursue something that only one of us wants, which is going to actually then create resentment for the other two, which is going to inevitably cause us to fail as a business. So do we want a franchise? Do we want to open a second location? Do we just want to keep doing what we're doing and keep fucking crushing it like we are? And I basically said, like, I want you guys to take like 2 to 4 weeks to think about this. This is not something that you should be able to just like spout off on top of your head. This should be something that you fucking take the time to sit with and define what you want. Because once you define what you want, you can actually kind of reverse engineer your life to hit those targets. And the beauty of that is that when you achieve those targets, you can actually be happy. Because we had essentially taken the 2 to 4 weeks logistically and mathematically with our gym, looked at what we needed to make in terms of memberships, in terms of contractors, in terms of events. And we said we needed X here, X here, X here. And it's really fucking cool is it not only seems achievable, but once we hit that target or those targets, we can just make sure that we're just serving the fuck out of the members and serving the fuck out of the contractors and making sure that all the events we do, we put all our effort into, because we don't need to hit that number and then be like, oh, but
more.
If we open a second location, then we could make more. But it's like, if we don't want that, like, both my business partners have two young kids and we've established, like, I want to, you know, they want to spend time with their kids. And I mean, obviously, if you guys have read any Gabor, like, that parallel of the society we live in, how we live in a society that praises workaholism, but demonizes addiction. Well, it's the same fucking thing. It's the exact same thing. It's just, again, a more societally acceptable way of avoiding your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, neglecting your kids, neglecting your wife, having affairs, yada, yada, yada. Oh, but fucking cool. You made $300,000 this year. You're the fucking man. It's like, yeah, but you're kind of a piece of shit. That even kind of goes back to the whole like sobriety recovery thing. It's.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say too, like what we talk about, what I've learned, and with one of the clients I do like social media management. So we talk about what's your most desired feeling and engineering your goals, reverse engineering your goals from that.
Yep.
And it goes, like, I would say, so for anyone listening who is considering, you know, removing anything, it's like, it applies to what Max is saying. What's your most desired feeling? Why do you want to quit? And then just reverse engineer from there. Like, I just feel like that's such, it's golden advice for anything.
And I mean, we've talked about it the whole time, but like, the less distractions you have, the easier it is to get to the core of what you want. And when I say distractions, I mean alcohol, I mean drugs, I mean online dating, I mean social media. Limiting them. You don't need to, you know, completely eliminate it from your eyes. But if you start to eliminate one, you'll start to realize, like, oh shit, I actually have a little bit more, you know, time and energy to think about these things. And if you eliminate two, I have even more time. Eliminate three, you have even fucking more time. And it's just, as you start to eliminate one by one, you start to realize that there actually is a lot more things you could be doing with your time that could be conducive to you, you know, getting to that root kind of core value of yours. And then you can start working towards that. Because if you don't have passion or purpose in life, it's going to be really hard to do anything.
I feel like I experienced that in the more capacity where I'm just like, I talk about it on the podcast and I won't dive into it too much, but I do too much, right? I always say, oh, you do too much. You do too much. You do too much. But it's easier for me to show up and get that, like, those endorphins and that dopamine when I am seeking other people's approval and working for them and doing things that are good for their business and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, than focusing on mine.
And that'll switch though over time, right? It'll switch.
It will. It does. And it already has. I'm like already changing all of these, like, so many aspects of it. But it's just funny because, like, we won't be comparing if we're chasing the value or the most desired feeling. Because if your most desired feeling isn't fame and traveling the world as a comedian, then you're not even
like,
fucking
even that you
about
can peel
that.
Back. Like, what does that mean? Do you want more access and exposure to new experiences? Yeah. Do you want to be meeting new people? Like, do you feel good? Do you feel good when you make people laugh?
Yes.
Do you want to be in situations where you can do more of that? Like, Because there's so many ways to do that. So anyway, I love it.
Okay.
We just and. Thing.
But that's fine. And?
But yeah, I do think that define, and I've been like, honestly, even with a lot of my clients, like I've been at like posing that question. My most recent episode of my podcast, like I posed that question to all the listeners and just said, like, take the next 1, 3, 6 months and think about it.
I'm going to do it.
It's a very simple question. It's not an easy question, but it's a very simple question. And I mean, I use that analogy with fitness all the time. Fitness is fucking simple. It's not easy because we live in a very hyper palatable, hyper distractible world, which makes making those simple fitness changes really fucking hard.
Okay, last question for you. Two questions. What are the top three books that you think that everyone should listen to or read that are listening to the pod right now? And how can people find you and connect with you?
Okay, so my Instagram is MaxLaRockFit. So MaxLaRockFit, you can listen to my podcast, the Squats and Sober Thoughts podcast, on any streaming platform. You can go to my website at MaxLaRockFitness.com. Facebook, if people still use Facebook, I don't know. I'm older, so I don't know if people still use Facebook. You can go to Facebook.
I'm an elder millennial.
I think that's the three main places to find me. I'm most active on Instagram. I am not a TikToker. I know I should be, but I am not because I fucking hate that app, so I don't use it.
So do I.
Fucking hate that app.
Understand.
Three books. That's a really fucking hard one. I almost have to like look
but
at my bookshelf.
I follow your book list. Like whenever you're posting about books, I'm like, oh, I love that. Oh, I've read that. Oh, it's on my to read list. So I feel like as far as the book inspo, you've got it.
The first book that actually made me ever start thinking about things differently. I was shit-faced in the bathtub and I was listening to Oprah's I gotta preface this with the reality behind this story. I was shit-faced in the bathtub because back then when I used to be like every Monday, I would get off work early those nights and it was like, oh, sick, go get fucked up. But I used to like drink in the bathtub because it was, I don't know, just a nice bathtub, the kind I was living at. So I was listening to Oprah's podcast at the time and she had on Eckhart Tolle as a guest. And they were doing, I think it was like an 8-week series where they were basically doing a chapter each week of his most recent book, A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. And I remember being shit-faced in the bathtub, as mentioned, and listening to that and was just like, holy fuck, like, this ain't it kind of thing. Like, that was the first actual, and this is actually a good thing for the listeners to hear because I was 26 at the time and I didn't do anything with that for another 4 years. So don't think that, you know, just because you're having those thoughts now, like you need to act on it right now. And if you don't, you're a failure, you suck. Like It takes a lot of time and there's a lot of, and you know, Eckhart talks about like conditioned thinking. If you've thought a certain way for X amount of time, you can't just go into it with the expectation that, oh, I'm going to meditate for 3 days and I'm fucking golden. I'm just a Buddhist monk now. Like life's going to be fucking great. It doesn't work that way, but the more you can accept that and again, be compassionate with yourself, the more you can start to apply different tools like journaling, meditation, therapy, psychology, exercise, eating well, all the above to help to, you know, further those changes and make it, you know, more impactful in a shorter period of time. So that would be my first one. So A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose by Eckhart Tolle. A recent one would be Dopamine Nation by Anna Lemke. I think for the younger generation from, you know, ages of 15 to 30, realistically, like Probably the most applicable book every fucking one on this planet needs to read right now and or listen to, because it's really cool to learn the neuroscience behind it. And especially because she talks a lot about it in sort of perspectives of like almost like non-traditional, air quotes, non-traditional addictions. Like the first story in the book is like pretty fucked up. Like you would never think of that as being an addiction, but again, anything kind of can be an addiction if
My
it has a high dopamine
was
response.
Show on MTV, so number I was obsessed.
yeah, straight up. If it was like an X-rated show, the first story in the book would be on that show. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Dopamine Nation. And then it's either a toss-up between The Body Keeps the Score.
Ooh, yeah, classic.
It's a toss-up between three. I have to. The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. When the Body Says No, The Cost of Hidden Stress by Gabor Mate.
Oh.
or his newest one, The Myth of Normal, Healing Mental Illness in a Toxic Society, I believe it's called. Yeah.
Cool.
Those would be my three.
I'll do links.
Yeah, like most.
I say this every time, I never do it. But
yeah, they're, I mean, it's just very, again, they're, I'll use the word like applicable reads. And I would just guarantee whether it applies to you directly, it would apply to a friend or a family member or someone who you may know that you can start to piece some things together. And especially in the realm with like the body keeps a score and the body says no, of like unresolved trauma and how it does manifest itself in a physical way in Crohn's, cancer, colitis, autoimmune, stroke, heart attack, all of these very prevalent things in society that get linked to, you know, people kind of like scapegoat it and just say like, oh, it's because you're overweight and because you drink and this and that. And it's like, no.
And you have bad
genes. Yeah, right. And that's like, that's not helping things abso-fucking-lutely, but there's something under the surface. And that's why it, like, even just to touch quickly back on like, you know, the spectrum of like drug addiction versus exercise addiction, like, again, yeah, you're doing healthy things for your body from a physiological standpoint, but there's still things below the surface that do need to be addressed. And if you don't, over time, like probably something's going to happen. Not to be too cynical, but like it's going to come out in some way, shape or form. And like, again, we live in a society that like, how fucking prevalent is anything mental health? How prevalent is anything autoimmune? How prevalent is anything IBS? All of the above, like.
Hi.
Right? Yeah, I was like, it's so funny, Max, because before I started working with you, which it's like the perfect amount of everything, by the way. But before I started working with you on nutrition, I never considered myself someone who had disordered eating, right? Like that was for other people and my friends and, you know, whatever. I was like, no, I'm fine. It's not normal to not eat all day until 6 p.m.
That we talked about that in your consult.
I know. Yep. And like, I literally cried last week being like, I ate breakfast 4 days in a row.
Which is
like,
fucking I was awesome.
So proud of myself.
It's fucking awesome.
It's like a serious habit, like, to change. And I'm like, why have I done this? Oh, well, I'm addicted to the anxiety. Like, so bad for my nervous system. Not like when I just have caffeine, no water, and no food in the morning. I am a monster, an actual monster. And so it's just been a really interesting roller coaster ride. So I appreciate you and thank you for helping me with that.
Well, I'm very happy to. And for any of the Americans listening, I do charge in Canadian currency, which is essentially fucking Monopoly money to you guys. So it's actually quite cheap for you guys.
So it's really cheap. Yeah. So hit up Max. There's a plug, but awesome. Well, we appreciate you so much. This
yes,
was so
please.
Fun. Like you have to come on again, especially. Yeah, this is great.
I find out in May about the Compassion Inquiry course because I believe it starts in July. So, yeah.
Exciting. Yeah. Also, I'm sober and I'm really good at squatting, so I feel like you should have me on your podcast.
Done.
Okay, cool.
Done. Happily. The first 5 episodes I've done have all been solo, so I'm kind of looking for guests at this point too. So I would be happy to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for having me on. That was a lot of fun. I haven't actually been on a podcast in a while, so that was a lot of fun.
You crushed it. Thank you so much, Max. We can't wait to have you on again.
And happy early birthday.
Happy early birthday.